Hey, this is Sten, and you are listening to the My Thought Coach podcast. So welcome. This is episode one, the very first. So enjoy. Here's how it will work every episode from here on out. We'll have a discussion and some learning about some of the principles that I really feel strongly about that I'm positive will help you in your life and help all of us do it all better. And then every discussion will end. At the very end will be some tools or a guided meditation to help apply the things that have been discussed in the podcast. Sometimes it'll be interviews. Sometimes it'll be real life problems and how we've been able to deal with them. And sometimes it'll be real clients that I've worked with and hearing their experiences and the way that we were able to approach that, because we will all hear our stories in the stories of other people. So I look forward to starting this off, and I thank you for being here. Tune in to the end for a great guided affirmation session that will cover the information in the podcast. Okay, hey, I'm Sten Hansen. You might know me from this podcast. Yeah.
And I'm Megan Getz, creative director at My Thought Coach.
Thank goodness we have a creative director. That's important. Just so you know, that's a good thing. So Meg came over this morning with Tropical Smoothie Cafe smoothies, and we've been talking about this idea of starting forever a talking podcast on My Thought Coach podcast. And before, if you're listening to this, you're probably one of the people that used to tune in here for affirmations. And then my meditation station podcast is more for guided relaxation, guided stuff. So here's the plan moving forward. Just so you know, we just decided to sit down and start talking. So if you get a little lost and a little bored, just stick with it, because there will be a point here. I feel strongly this is going to be a good thing.
Yes.
But our goal here is to start a podcast here where we, as a place to discuss and learn and get inspired and be able to restore our faith in the ability to change things that aren't working and to have a new perspective possibly about, because there are problems, and all of you and us are facing very hard, not easily dealt with problems and challenges in our lives. And any kind of pop psychology or anyone saying that you could write affirmations that's really going to change your life would be crazy. But I do believe so strongly that there are things that you can do, that we can all do, and I've seen evidence of it so many times, to really change our lives. So we decided to just turn on the microphone and see how this works. If you're listening to it, it means it passed the test. And at the end of it, we felt like maybe there was something. So I was overwhelmed by just talking by myself. So I felt like it would be a little better to have someone here to help direct this conversation so that my ADD tendencies don't take over.
Fantastic. Well, and you explained it perfectly. Meditation Station, that podcast has such powerful meditations to get you through some crazy things. And this, the My Thought Coach podcast, will kind of be like behind the scenes, explaining how to use those meditations, how to use the tools and what's going on in your brain. So,
yeah. And you know what would be so awesome is if you help participate in some of the things that we talk about. If you come across something that you love, or you have a challenge or problem that you want addressed here, that's what we want. We want to hear from you. So where should they write?
Email Sten at My Thought Coach.
Will you email me at Sten at My Thought Coach, kind of what your thoughts are, or if there's just a deep desire in your heart to have discussed here. This is in our minds. This is kind of like a Dr. Lara meets what?
Oh.
Meets.
Kind of like hanging out at the smoothie cafe also. It's kind of like,
I don't know. It's just stuff.
Well, good stuff. But it's like some of the best, honest goodness, best things that happen in my brain is when I'd be out to eat with you and we would just start processing the day's problems or the life problems, and you'd explain to me what's going on and why it's working, and it would unwind these knots in my head. So I feel like it's like Dr. Lara, but also going out to eat somewhere fun and making it work.
Yeah. Okay. So let's you guys, you listeners and us, we're just enjoying smoothies together. So if you don't have one, go get a smoothie or something else, a water.
Yeah.
A caffeinated beverage. We don't care. Just work with us.
Join us.
Because the thing that's amazing is I spent a lot of time working with people that had addiction. And it was always remarkable to me how there's something beautiful about that process. Many, many things, which I want to kind of dissect a little bit on this show. But I was also amazed at how the stories of people, as they would share their stories and their struggles, people that had nothing to do, I mean, no life context at all. We have very little in common. But their stories, I would always hear pieces of my own story in the stories of other people. And that is what I'm hoping can happen, yeah. Is that through the use of stories, some of them will be personal. Some of them will be people that I've worked with in the past. Some of them may be your stories. That we will be able to use these stories to kind of explore things that make a difference, that help us keep going and restore your faith that we can change.
Yes.
And restore your understanding that difficult days and times and bad, unproductive moments are a huge part of the life experience that we're having. And that throughout all of it, there's kind of a transformative struggle. That's my favorite saying these days, so I'm going to say it a lot. But that there is meaning and purpose in everything, every moment. Yeah.
That makes me think of, like, your own story, how you started. That's powerful, and that's huge. Like what it is that actually got you thinking about your thoughts.
Okay, so maybe we'll just go there.
Yeah.
So I remember I was a young mom and I got married very young. And I was, I can't even remember if I had a kid or not, but I was 20. Yeah, I was pregnant, I think. And I remember being really discouraged and just upset about some difficult things in the life transitions that I was going through and trying to finish my degree. And it was just kind of a crazy time. And I remember reading or just having this understanding on a really deep and profound level that the thoughts that I had were just thoughts and that I didn't have to accept that I could choose the thoughts that stuck. I couldn't necessarily control the thoughts that came in, but that I had a choice of what I believed. And for some reason, it was like this aha moment that I got to choose not the thoughts that came, but I got to choose the thoughts that would stay and that would stick around. And ever since then, I've been really fascinated with this whole idea of how to master and shift and change what goes on in our inner world, in our inner dialogue.
That's so powerful. So if, for example, someone out there is like, okay, I've got thoughts that are coming in that I don't like and I want to get them out. How on earth do I do that when the anxiety and the emotions start, you know, just taking over? I can't even think, let alone get rid of those thoughts. What do I do when the emotions boil up?
So that's the crazy thing, is because thoughts are linked with emotions, and that's where the crazy comes. And understanding that a lot of the difficult emotions and emotional states that we are experiencing in our lives are most of the time triggered by a thought. And the freedom to just say, that's just a thought, and I can change that thought. So I'm trying to think of an example. What's an example?
Well, you talk about the amygdala a lot. Like, that's to save us, like when something dangerous is going to happen.
Right.
I thought that was so powerful in like some of your other videos. And you talk about it, even like recently, one of your other videos a couple years ago said, if you've got a thought in your mind and there's no pause, oh, I'm going to put my shoes on, I'm going to put my socks on, no problem, no pause, then it doesn't have the emotion boil up, doesn't have a second to kind of get out of control. But if it's like, oh, I need to talk to my boss, and then you pause, that emotion kind of boils up where there could be some really good tools if we were able to recognize what's going on in our brain and that something has gotten triggered where we would be able to have a power if we could just figure out what was going on.
Yeah, so there was this, there are three basic ideas of what our thoughts, or what our behavior is kind of dictated by, right? Like originally there was this genetic determinism, which means that your grandparents and the genes that are inside of your body are going to determine whether you have depression, whether you have a fiery temper, whether you have certain tendencies that you're you have a predisposition genetically to behave and to respond a certain or specific way in your life. There's a thing called the psychic determinism, and that basically says that your parents and their anxiety has caused you to have this anxiety as well. So it's a little bit more kind of the behavior that you saw in your home that you're mirroring. And there's no question that our genetics play a huge role in kind of our temperament and how we show up. And also that the things that we grow up in, there's also, you know, environmental influences would also choose our, how we act and behave. So let's say that your kids are super annoying, then of course you're going to be freaked out because they are determining what it is that you do, or the driver in front of you that is super slamming on their brakes and not turning on their blinkers. And of course you're ready to kill someone because they're just being so annoying. So that's the determinism coming in, that your outside world and your environment has the ability to kind of navigate what your emotional state is. But I love the story of Viktor Frankl, who was, he was a determinist, and he was a psychiatrist and also a Jew. But he was kind of raised in the Freudian background, that there was a deterministic behavior. And he had, and everyone's heard about this story of Viktor Frankl, but I think it's just really important to bring up again this idea that he was in a situation. So he was a psychiatrist already, educated as a psychiatrist. Because he was a Jew, he was put in the death camps. While there, he lost his mother, his father, his wife, his brothers. One sister survived, but everyone else, there was a constant, people were dying really regularly. And he had this, he just saw things that were so repugnant that it would just be devastating to the human to kind of even resolve how to keep going after something, you know, things that he saw and experienced there. But he talks about in his book, the meaning,
meaning of life?
No, it's something like that. Man's Search for Meaning. Yeah, Man's Search for Meaning. How he was in a room and they did experiments on some of the Jews. The medical professionals would do these medical experiments on people in the death camps there, because they figured they were, you know, what an ideal circumstance to start doing some testing on different kinds of drugs and levels of tolerance for pain and all sorts of horrendous things. And he was huddled in a room and he had this thought or this this idea that he had the ability to see himself, like to rise above himself and watch his body as if he was separate from it. So I want you right now, wherever you are, to just imagine that you are now, you're not just sitting there sipping on your smoothie or whatever it is that you're doing, driving or walking around or whatever, but that you're actually having the ability to kind of rise above yourself and see yourself as an observer and watch yourself. And what is your emotional state, or what is, pay attention to your mental acuity, or what's going on inside of you right now as an observer, not just looking at the physical, what you look like, what you may look like physically, because, you know, that's not that special really, but really you also have the ability to recognize how you're doing emotionally, the kind of feelings that you're having inside, the kind of thoughts, like maybe right now you're saying, this is super lame and I need a little bit more from this podcast, or I'm going to turn it off. But what are those thoughts that are coming up? And that ability that you have to do that is a demonstration that you are so above my sweet dog, Oliver, who's right here at my feet and who always records with me. And you've probably heard him sniffing sometimes. His brain does not have the ability to become self-aware and to notice what is happening, but we do. And so Viktor Frankl was able to identify this, and he also was able to use then to project himself. And he began to use these mental games, and he would project himself to places in the future where he could imagine himself teaching to classes of psychology students the things that he was learning right there in the death camps. And that he had that ability to then expand his inner world, that there was nothing that he could do to control his environment. There was nothing that he could do to control the things that would happen to him physically, or his environment, or what he ate or what he didn't. Every single decision was taken from him. Every freedom was taken from him, but the one freedom of being able to choose what happened inside of his inner world. And that there was this moment between a trigger and a response, that little moment that differentiates us from all other animals and that has literally given humans dominion over the earth because of this, is we have the ability to choose how we respond. And I think we forget that. We forget that because it is such a quick ingrained thing. And we are quick to blame everything we can think of as to why we're not functioning well or why we're miserable. But there is, think about the freedom also and the potential that lies within, what if I could be in the most horrific situation and I could choose my thoughts and I could choose where I went? Because eventually he was able to rise above the freedom, essentially, that his captors had. He became more free, essentially, than those people that had captured him, because he had freedom of his mind and his response. And so this freedom to choose, particularly the freedom to choose our thoughts, is super important. And the thoughts that we have triggers where we are emotionally. So that didn't answer your amygdala question at all.
No.
Except that.
It answered like 100 other questions.
Clearly I have ADD, which is just fine. There's a lot in there, and hopefully we'll just be able to sort through and find it. But
there's so much good stuff in there. That's so powerful.
But the reason that it is important, guys, everyone is telling you to meditate. Everyone is telling you, like giving mm-hmm. you these little self-helpy stuff. And there are so many things that work. But I want you to understand that the reason it is so important that you do meditate, or the reason that you would be very interested in learning how to do EFT on yourself, or how to coach yourself through difficult times, is because of your amygdala response. And if you can manage how your amygdala responds in your life, you can take over the world. You will be able to have what you want most. The life circumstances that you can't control your environment, really. You can't. You can try. We all try.
Things are going to happen to you.
Yeah. But you can, if you can control and find tools that will calm down your amygdala, that the reason that you're interested in anything to do with controlling, with affirmations, with any of the tools that I've ever presented in the past, it is so that you can have your amygdala calm. Because when your amygdala is calm, your weight goes down, your health improves, your relationships you become a person that is interested in the future, in building and restoring and creating bridges in relationships instead of antagonistic relationships. Your creativity expands.
Give us what the amygdala does. Where is it? What's it doing when it gets triggered? What triggers it? And what does it, like, give our brain? Like, how does it all fit together?
Okay. Great question. So the amygdala, you guys have heard it. It's the fight or flight. It's the primitive brain. It's the reptile brain. It's the part of your brain that's super interested in making sure that you stay alive. If you see my video, it's the one that responds when you're about to be hit by a bus, that gives you the power to get out of a situation that is harmful. And because of our environment, and because there are just a lot of reasons that our amygdalas are triggered all the time now, because anytime that you're feeling kind of anxious or worried, and your mental game is getting you kind of riled up, your amygdala is going to be riled up. So you've immediately decreased your immune response when you're stressed out in traffic. I mean, it's so dumb, but it's very, I mean, and your odds of being able to communicate well with your kids or really connect with them on a level that's meaningful, or to be able to have higher executive functioning, like thinking about how to make your job work or how to function or make it just do better in your life. All of those things are dramatically diminished when you're feeling anxious because your brain is saying those are the lowest priority. The only priority is survival. And so you're going to fight. You're going to have this fight or flight response that has kept humans alive for generations. It's super important. Super harmful a lot of the time. So if you have the ability to calm down your amygdala, and they're just such simple tools. I think it's fascinating. I was reading about how if you are feeling anxious in traffic, or if you're in a fight with someone, or you're in an argument and you feel that kind of elevation of your heart rate. So that's when your amygdala, that's what the amygdala feels like when it's kind of getting all punched up.
Yeah.
You know that feeling, like
you can almost feel your pulse in your neck.
Yeah. And you know, and the more aware you become and the more awake you become to how your body responds to an elevated amygdala, you will notice when this happens.
Yeah.
For me, it's like my chest starts to get tight. My hands kind of clench.
Mm-hmm.
I want to fight.
Yeah.
I kind of just want to get in an argument with whoever's in front of me. Right. Or if no one's in front of me, then I'll just, you know, you berate yourself, whatever it is.
Yeah.
This is the craziest thing. I want you to try this next time you're feeling that response, whatever it is for you, and you know what it is. Think about what just gets you hot. You know, it's one of those things that you think, no, I just think my kids were so bad, I had to yell at them, right? That kind of stuff. Those are the things that's your amygdala taking over the show.
Yeah.
If you can imagine biting into a lemon, this is why. If your brain senses that you're able to generate saliva, it immediately says, I mean, your amygdala starts to calm down. And I'll tell you why.
Okay.
So like chew gum, or imagine biting into a lemon, because you are generating saliva. And that means if this human organism has the ability to eat, then maybe the tiger is not going to kill them.
Yes. The danger might be past.
Yeah. And you're just, because really you're interested in buying time so that you can get your brain back, so you can have that pause between the stimuli and your response. And that is the greatest power we have. And we give it away all the time. And you know how we give it away a lot now? People pick up their freaking phones.
Oh,
this is what kids do when this is what everyone does. Phones are right there. Mm-hmm. And I feel like this is going to be, there will be repercussions of this. But if you are the person that says, I'm bored, I'm picking up my phone. Mm-hmm. I'm anxious, I'm going to pick up my phone. And whatever it is for you that you do. Social media is great.
I can't make a decision and I'll pick up my phone.
Yeah.
I'll be like, oh, I have so many important things to do. I don't know where to start. Well, pick up my phone and get distracted.
Yeah.
Why don't I?
And it works, because if you're picking up a phone and thinking about whatever it is you're looking at, it will calm down your amygdala. But you are trading out the potential. What if you were to use the stressful or the trigger that's in front of you as a tool to transform you into a higher version of yourself? If you would fight the urge to pick up your phone, and we'll talk about urges in another episode.
Yes.
But there will be an urge, right? Pick up your phone. It's an urge. You've trained yourself already that this is going to help everything calm down. And it does.
And it's like reinforced.
But then it's like, I can't calm down without the phone.
Right.
Or I can't.
Right.
And then we're bringing our phones into every social. Like we're really handicapping ourselves pretty dramatically.
Yeah.
But what if instead we said, hooray.
Yeah.
Something just triggered me to freak out. Like,
and
instead
I recognized it.
Yeah. And like, thanks kids for being so insane that I feel like I'm going to scream right now, because you were the stimuli that was loud enough So you're doing your job perfectly by pushing me to the edge so that I have a moment to become aware and make a better choice. And it can start, honestly, by just imagining biting into a lemon.
That's awesome.
Or throwing some gum in your mouth. So there's a little tool right there for you.
I've never heard that.
Yeah.
How long have I known you and I have never heard? That's amazing.
Yeah, totally true. Yeah, I don't know. But that's awesome. The amygdala is kind of the brain research and where brain research is right now. And everyone's kind of talking about this. So I know I'm not revolutionary or changing your world. But let me just be one more person to say the reason you would do any of the meditation. I feel like people for 10 years were like, yeah, meditation is so great. But nobody was really saying, why is it so great? The reason it's so great is it allows your amygdala to stay calm. And when that amygdala is calm, and you have the ability to duplicate a calm feeling within you, when triggers or stimuli from the outside, Viktor Frankl, I mean, odds are you won't have stimuli like that.
Hopefully not.
But if that can be your type in a shadow, and that can be kind of your pattern for I get a choice.
Yeah.
And you buy your time, you just grab whatever tools you can. But so meditation is a great tool to help prepare your mind and your body to go, I know where to go. I know what it feels like to be inside of a relaxed body.
Right.
But still, nobody knows how to do that really on a
dime.
That's
a hard, right.
It's hard.
You learn it and give your brain that option instead of phone is the only way, substance is the only way.
Right.
You just give that really healthy option.
Yeah.
Train it.
Yeah. And then it just kind of changes your relationship with the difficulties in your life. Whereas before, maybe you were trying to navigate and avoid them. And
yes.
But they're unavoidable, some of them.
Right. Because how many times have you heard someone say, who's dealing with anxiety or depression or whatever, the initial, even someone who's just stressed out, the initial response is, I got to change what's around me. I got to change jobs. I got to move. I got to do this. I got to get out.
I got to get out of my marriage.
I just
yell at my kids. I got to, whatever it is. Yeah.
Like,
I gotta
that's
change
what's
this.
Bringing me down.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yes, there, you could be in something that's maybe extra stressful, maybe abusive, who knows what it is, but chances are anything around you when you're stressed is going to look like the culprit.
Yeah.
Anything around, you're going to probably blame it on that and say, that's why I'm stuck. That reason, that person, that relationship, this place I live, any of those are causing the sadness and pain.
And I would go even one step beyond that and say that you are not allowed to make any life decisions until you control your inner world. Because you could trade in one bad thing for something even worse. But when you have the ability and you sense the responsibility, really, you've been given this amazing mind that is the most valuable thing in the universe. I mean, there is nothing more valuable, worth more millions of dollars than the things that your mind can do. And that is such a gift. And it combines all of these elements with who you are. The best parts of you are all kind of connected together. If you can master that, And use the events of the day that will break you and push you down as tools to become truly, those are tools, and you become grateful for them, that those are the very things that are going to help you learn. Those are the very curriculum that you need the most to master your inner world. There's tremendous power in that, I think.
Absolutely.
And so tools are so important. And I kind of went about it the wrong. I mean, everyone just kind of has their own journey. But I really feel like we stumble when we're ready to learn something and apply it. We stumble on the very things that we need. It'll be a book. It may be this podcast. Mm-hmm. It may be some. Maybe you stumbled upon something that I recorded 5 or 10 years ago. And it was just the thing that worked for you. And that's what happens when you have a calm amygdala, is you are aware of the things in your life that you need at that time in your life. And you can trust yourself. Stop not trusting yourself.
Yeah.
Your biggest job is just, how do I stay calm in my inner world? How do I stay in control? How do I not become just the base animal parts of me that is filled with just urges and instinct and survival?
Well, and you said something really important there, too. You said, trust yourself. Because all those things that you are, your thoughts, your soul, everything is good.
Yeah.
You are good. And when you get stressed out, it's hard to feel that you're good.
Yeah.
There's so much love you could let into your life when you're actually more calmed down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So trust yourself when your mind is calm.
Yes.
That's the part you trust.
Yes. Don't go for the...
Other than that, you just say, oh, you're just a thought. I don't there have to trust you. There isn't right. a bus that's about to hit me. There's not a line that's about... Like, that's the kind of thought that you guys need to have. Is this thought true? Challenge your thinking, especially the thinking that gets you anxious. That is kind of how I want to close, is challenge it. Is this thought true? Do I know 100% that this thought is true? And before I really respond to this thought, could I get myself into a little bit calmer place to just make sure? And what would my life be like without this thought? What would it be like? What would my relationship with this person be if I stopped thinking this negative thought about them or this fearful, anxious thought? What would my life be like without it? And you have a choice and you have a responsibility. You get to choose. How wonderful is that? That nobody's behavior gets to choose what goes on in your inner world. Ultimate freedom, yeah?
That's amazing. Ultimate freedom.
Yeah. So that's kind of what I'm hoping we can explore here.
Yes.
Yeah. Is there anything else we need to talk about? Or is this long enough?
This is great. I'm going to go buy some gum and lemons. You better believe it. I love it. But we've got so many awesome things.
Yeah.
Every time I talk to you, you've got like this, each week it's a different new amazing thing to explore of the brain or relationships or life. And it's fascinating. It would be awesome to put each of these together because people love it. I love it.
And so that's kind of what we were thinking is like, I could take my random thing that I'm excited about each week.
Yes.
And learn about it. And they're just start to organize things so that they can help you as much as they've helped me. And pieces of my story will start to emerge, I'm sure, as we get to know each other through this podcast. And as I share, and I feel like it's important that I have had quite a life. A crazy, wacky, nutty life. And
fantastic.
And there are things I can just unequivocally say have transformed me and given me strength beyond other things. But this idea that our thoughts, we get to choose, we get to challenge our thoughts, that the thoughts that we have 9 times out of 10 may not even be true. And that if we can calm down our amygdalas, our lives will improve in just about every other way. So I will leave you with that quick tool, the imagine biting into a lemon when you're anxious. And maybe next week we'll talk about disasters, because there's some interesting stuff that happens when you really are in a situation where there is danger. And the research has been pretty profound on how people who survive, what goes on in their minds versus not surviving, because this is kind of a crazy world, so I kind of have power over that.
Yeah.
But just the idea of breathing in for 4, holding for 4, breathing out for 4, and holding for 4, that's another trick to your brain that is an anchor for your mind when you're anxious. If you can breathe in a controlled, slow, rhythmic way, your amygdala will immediately begin to back off, and your ability to make better decisions, way better decisions, you'll have access to that again. And your ability to know what to do next. Sometimes you just have to trust that if I can calm down, I can trust that I will know what to do next. And I guess that's kind of, yeah, you will. You will know what to do next. You may not be able to know exactly what to do next for the next 5 years, but you can know what the next best thing is. And sometimes that's all you've got. And a lot of times that's really all you need, is the next best moment. Because that's where all your power is, right? Is in the moment you're in right now. You don't have power or control over anything else that's going to happen next week, really. You can make choices, but you can't control things, but you get to choose right now in this moment what goes on in your inner world, and whether it's a calm, peaceful place that nurtures creativity and relationships and health and movement and spirituality and connection to God and others, or not. Okay. How do we do? Send us an email. I want to hear your thoughts.
Yay.
And if there's a challenge, if there is, we'll do some case studies in here. So if there's something unique that you want us to talk about, or a challenge or a problem, send it to us.
Perfect. Tell them your email again.
Stin, S-T-I-N, at mythoughtcoach.com. Here is that bonus recording I promised you to help you calm down your amygdala and your anxiety response. Remember, fear is an emotional response designed to keep you out of danger, and it happens when there actually is danger, some actual identifiable threat right in front of you. The difference between fear and anxiety is that anxiety usually happens when there isn't necessarily a real threat, but is instead caused by thoughts or worries or concerns related to a fear, not the actual existence of the fear necessarily. Now, sometimes there are very real situations that are dangerous, but this is for those times the way you're thinking is wreaking havoc on your life. You can develop the ability to calm your mind in the face of feelings of anxiety. Highly anxious people, or people suffering with post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD, may find that their amygdala is so used to producing a stress response that mental and physical stress can begin to feel like a normal state. Allowing your body to go through the process of getting into a relaxed place will help it learn what that feels like, to help you become keenly aware of the difference between a tense and a relaxed body. You can never underestimate the value of just that process alone, becoming relaxed. So visit my other podcast, Meditation Station, and I'll link to it in the podcast notes. But I want you to look for a recording that is designed to relax your body, and I'll put some of those titles in the notes below. But go through one of those exercises as often as you can. You'll resonate with one or the other. There are a couple of different methods that I use. But use one that will help you get to a place of deep relaxation. And then to help you memorize that feeling of relaxation, as you're going through the guided meditation that you can find on either my website or the podcast, create a picture in your mind of how calm you are while you, I'm just going to give you an anchor. You can, what I do is I gently massage or even squeeze my left earlobe. I know that's weird, but this spot or any anchor spot can serve as an anchor to remind you of the relaxation that you're feeling, so that in the future you can return to that sensation of gently squeezing or massaging your left ear, and those feelings and memories of that relaxation will fill your mind and really allow you to return to that relaxed place more quickly and automatically the next time that you need it. Some people will squeeze their thumb with their other hand. It doesn't really matter, but it needs to be the same place, and it needs to be a physical sensation that's connected to an emotional state. So every time you become relaxed, find a little anchor that will help you return there more quickly. The following meditations are based on some of the most recent research on eliminating anxiety, specifically panic attacks and amygdala triggering episodes. So listen to and say either out loud or in your mind the following affirmations. You might want to do this exercise either right after guided relaxation, like the ones on my site, or on their own while using that relaxation anchor point to help you get more relaxed. Just because I believe right now that my negative worries or visions are true doesn't mean that they are. Say that in your mind or out loud. Just because a negative thought comes into my mind, I don't have to believe it. I notice my thoughts and catch myself before believing that they're true or that they'll become a reality. I can merely observe negative thoughts and images without getting completely absorbed in them. I can see them for what they are. Just because I think something wrong or bad is going to happen doesn't mean that it will. I practice being optimistic in my speech and my thoughts. I am quick to challenge my negative thinking. When I feel anxious inside, I immediately become aware of my breath and intentionally slow it down. When I'm anxious, I breathe in for 4, hold for 4, exhale for 4, and hold for 4. I continue this pattern, counting to 4 in my mind for each inhale and hold as long as it takes to relax. I know that I can stop a panic response by deliberately going to this kind of breathing. If I'm really stuck and I feel anxiety is close, I look for a place that I can go to exercise. I run stairs, I pace back and forth, I do squats. Physical movement helps me manage feelings of panic. I prepare tools ahead of time that I can use to help me if panic arises again. I chew gum or imagine biting into a lemon if panic begins to hit. I massage my left ear to help my body remember the trigger of being relaxed. Any of the above affirmations you can either say over in your mind until they become really yours in your own voice, or you can try writing them, or both. You'll learn your style as you begin to kind of take on these thoughts and let them really permeate your thinking, because you're the very best coach, the very best thought coach you have is the one inside of your mind. Until next week, this is Stin.